Sandra, we were talking about the knowing the unknown, and I think that knowing the unknown is kind of the edge of reality. Before, I already spoke about realizing reality. So, getting to know the unknown is right at the fringe between what we do know and what we don't know. In a way, it's our event horizon, as it was called in the theory of relativity, or it's the horizon, as it was called by von Goethe. And he said, well, we all have our horizon in what we can see, and as a result, what we cannot see. And if you shrink that horizon of what you can see and oversee to zero, then that is the standpoint that people have. And so in talking about getting to know the unknown, there's actually a couple of topics that will come out of that. One of them is about what von Goethe said, that you need to step out of your standpoint if that what you perceive needs to be valid in a larger environment. So in a way, you need to expand your standpoint to encompass things around you. So you need to push out the event horizon, which of course naturally happens when you grow up. As a baby, you might be seeing only your cradle. As a child, you might be seeing mostly your house. As an adolescent, you might perceive the neighborhood. And as an adult, you would be capable to see the world. And of course, once you realize that you walk the world and it's a globe, you can see that the stars are the next level out. So in that sense, getting to know the unknown is an individual extension of your range of perception, but it is also a social extension of your range of involvement. And at that level, I'd like to at some point discuss the notion of growing up in politics, because there you then see that people need to grow up from an individual to a child to adolescent to adult, but the corresponding political schemas are that of a dictatorship, where somebody treats you as if you're a baby, or an oligarchy, where a small group of people treats the rest as if they're children, a democracy or a democracy or a democracy is where basically everybody is regarding themselves as adolescent and everybody else is adolescent and they try to overshout each other. And the grown-up version of politics, autarky, where everybody is a sovereign and together they determine how they can best help each other to make Earth beautiful. Another part of this getting to know the unknown story is this terminology for the unknown of things that are and can be, but of which we know not. And that's where the theme and topic of I, God comes in, because worldwide there are many placeholder words for the unknown. The word is usually described as God, and I came to realize that God actually is an acronym. It's a G-O-D, generate, operate, destroy, and it's that what we do in moving the boundary. So in this specific case, it is about moving the event horizon or moving the boundary of your self-limitations or overstepping your own limitations or overcoming your own limitations and getting to expand from where you are to where you can be. So in that sense, getting to know the unknown is the common denominator of basically moving out of your limitations. And before, I've already mentioned that there is this parallel between the conception of a bird, the bird in the egg, the bird in the nest, and the bird out on the wings in the world. And so these four levels of staging of our involvement or our expansion into the world around us is a nice metaphor for how we can deal with the unknown. And I'll just briefly recapitulate this notion, this model of the bird in the egg and getting out of the egg and getting out of the nest, because it is that principle of these four stages which is crucial in understanding how to get to know the unknown. I'll need to put a parallel in place in the development of science, because that's where we see that humans, as humanity, were able to grow out from the unknown, from the known into the unknown. So they were able to extend their understanding in the scientific exploration of classical theory, relativity theory, quantum theory, and field theory. And it is that principle of those four stages of extending understanding which is actually also related to sexuality and also related to the sleep cycle. So I want to connect them all up to show that in getting to know the unknown, we are going through a dynamic of shifting the event horizon and moving the boundary of our self-limitation, but that principle is something that we already know very well. So that even though we do not know the unknown, there is a dynamic built in within us for getting to know the unknown. And just to recapitulate something which I keep on telling people, remember that we are not born with a book in our head, that we have a kind of catalog of knowledge of this is how it's supposed to be. Quite the contrary, we are born with the capacity to learn. Our learning system and our immune system is part of the digestive system, which is parallel to the sleep cycle. It is the capacity to link the known and the unknown. It's the capacity to link the one side of the boundary with the other, which of course we have in the skin, in our body, in our sensory system, in our gut system, and in the cell membranes. So what I try to point out in this story of getting to know the unknown is that we all have that capacity, but we need to realize that it is something that happens in the now only, in the now here only. So most of my email addresses have a now here in there, but people who don't understand the principle involved, they think it spells nowhere. So there is this deeper understanding that we need to look for, which I already addressed in this relationship between reality and realization. So let me give a couple of these examples, starting with bird in the egg. Of course, the starting point is the conception, the inception of the sperm and the egg in the bird, as a result of which a process starts, and in the egg an embryo will form. There are different life forms who do it differently, but let's just stick with this model to help the understanding of the four stages involved. So first there is the fertilized egg cell, which then develops into the egg, which is as yet within the bird or within the chicken. And when people ask what was first the chicken or the egg, it is always the egg. The other life forms come from the egg, so the chicken is not as important as the egg, so it always starts with the egg. So then the egg is laid and hatched, and part of the hatching process is that the bird needs to, let's say, hatch it a way out of the egg. And this is a very important psychological stage in the development of understanding and the exploration of the unknown. So while the chicklet is in the egg, in the mother, there's basically nothing that can happen, because it is the process of starting initiation. It's the equivalent of our being a baby in a cradle. Things just have to happen until there is a movement which makes it possible to go into the next level of development. For us humans, it is birth. And for the chicken in the egg, or the bird in the egg, it is that hatcheting of the had the scaling of the scale of the egg to actually have to muster the inner strength to use the beak to crack the egg and break out of it. And a chicken that doesn't have that force is not able to do that. And there is an interesting parallel, because in our life there's something very similar. When conception takes place, the sperm goes to the end of the fimbriae, where it needs to connect to the egg coming from the oocyte. It then fertilizes at the end of the fimbriae, which is, say, the animus at the end of the uterus, the womb. And once it is fertilized, it travels back to the uterus, but there is a kind of ring pass knot. If the egg grows, the fertilized egg grows too quickly, it cannot pass through, and it actually gets stuck there, and the process of birth, of the preparation for birth, cannot happen. So in that same way, in the chicklet in the egg, if the chicklet doesn't develop well enough, it will actually die within the egg, because it cannot break out of there. So the first development in the bird is that it needs to have the strength to express itself across the limitations and then break the egg. And in humanity you see that in a way in birth, but you also see it in a similar way in adolescence. In birth you go from the womb into the earth. In adolescence you go from being an individual into being social. You actually change from being a human to being part of humanity. And so you need to crack the egg and need to overcome the limitations that you were sort of born with or birthed with, the eggshell of the mindset of your parents and your society, your church, your politics, and all the belief systems that surround you. So at some point you have to break through that and realize that that is simply a support system. Just like you have to pull the cork out of the bottle to get to the water which is inside of it. You need to open up outside of that egg shell to be able to see that there is another side of the story. In puberty, the boy and the girl realize that only together are they able to access that power of being part of humanity and being able to produce another part of humanity. So in the metaphor of the egg and the bird, you then have this stage in which the bird needs to break out of the eggshell and really needs to express itself, but at the same time it shouldn't go too far in that, because the bird suddenly discovers that it's in a nest high up in a tree, and if it expresses itself more and goes out of the boundary of the nest, it will fall out of the nest and will fall on the floor and die. So in our development in puberty, we sort of have those two processes going on at the same time. So on one hand, the adolescent needs to learn that it is essential to break out of the egg and to overcome these internal inbuilt and programmed and conditioned limitations, but at the same time not to overreach and not to overstretch and not to invade the privacy or the sphere of others. So in the bird you can see that once you have cracked the egg, how you sort of cracked the puzzle of birthing yourself as your individual being on the earth, you then still have to be aware that you don't fall out of the nest and fall to your death. So that there is a phase of development between having cracked the egg and before stepping out of the nest, that a development is needed in which your inner strength as a bird needs to connect up to your capacity to link up to the environment. In that sense you need to develop your sensitivity, which allows you, enables you to get in touch with what goes around you. This is something which is very similar to what happens in the development of our hindbrain and our forebrain. The hindbrain is where you have the reflex system, the motor activity system, the capacity to break out of the egg, and the sensory system in the forebrain, which is the whole surface of the body being able to sense and detect what's going on around us, which needs to be able to sort of reach out into our environment and be able to discern all these various types of vibrations that we have around us. And so from all these vibrations around us, know the difference between taste and smell and touch and hearing and seeing. And so in the sensory system, which by the way is a counterpart of the digestive system, all of the organs are connected in one cycle, and in the sensory system, they together form the whole spectrum of vibrations that we can detect, from deep pressure to surface pressure to smell to taste to hearing to seeing. And all of those vibrations together give us information about the world around us. And it is in a way that we can then see in this metaphor of the bird that between cracking out of the egg and before flying out of the nest, the bird needs to develop the wings. And for us, it is the development of that sensory system that we need to actually develop our, say, parabola antenna system, our sensory system, the forebrain, so that we can perceive what's going around us and relate that and correlate that to what's going on within us. We there see that we need to balance what goes on in the hindbrain, which is the core of our body, and the forebrain, which is the surface of our body, so that, as Bruce Lipton described for the relationship between the sensor protein and the portal protein, the sensor protein has the information about what goes on around us. The portal protein has the information about what we let in to our body or what we put out. And in the cell, you can see that they need to be connected by the linking protein so that they can coordinate their actions. And in puberty, we learn to coordinate our expressivity, our sensitivity. And so once that is attuned in the cell system, you can then see how it connects to the DNA mantle protein and adds information to the DNA. So new learning can be added to what has already been entered into the record of the DNA. In puberty, we do that too. We have that phase between cracking out of the egg and learning to fly that we develop our wings. We learn to see what we are ourselves, and we learn to see how we are different from others and what we can do differently than others. In sexuality, you can see that very precisely in the balance between the male and the female. The neuronal primordial perception male, the hormonal primordial perception female, they complement each other, and in that complementarity, in the sexuality, there is this complementarity between the egg and the sperm, out of which a new human cell can develop. The human comes as a two-component glue. The one part has half of the story, the other part is half of the story, and it's only when they come together that they can tell the whole story and produce a new zygote out of which a new human can be born. So in this metaphor of the bird developing, there is then that moment that the bird actually can take wing and goes out to see the world. And as I mentioned elsewhere, before you do that, it doesn't much matter what other birds come and tell you about the outside world, because you cannot give any meaning to it. how the birds can tweet about the mountains, about the rivers, about the lakes, about the forest, and so on. But before you're there, it doesn't make sense. You do not have an inner map in which you can integrate that information to form a coherent hologram of understanding. So in getting to know the unknown, we always start with the starting point where we are, I'll say in the egg or in the nest or in your standpoint. But the only way that you can extend your understanding about what goes on around you is by actually venturing there. You need to actually have an experience of transcending your own limitations so that you can see that there is not just what you know or knew, but also something else that you don't know as yet. So the interface of getting to know the unknown is very clear at the moment that the chick breaks out of the egg and this whole new world opens. When the baby is birthed and suddenly this whole world is open around. So we have this innate capacity of getting to know the unknown because we experience this transition from one side of the boundary to the other. And in all of my work, it is that transition from one side of the boundary to the other which stands central. It is the key to understanding everything, and it's also the key to understanding the known and the unknown. So that is also what we then see in the chicklet, which has developed the wings and can from then on go out into the world, fly around, have these experiences, and come back to the nest. And it is that cycle of being out of the egg, in the nest, out in the world, coming back to the nest, which we experience in our sleep cycle. The sleep cycle is a very powerful instrument for understanding the relationship between the known and the unknown. And in many of the religions, it is actually the key to understanding what they try to describe. Very often the religions talk about the relationship between good and evil. If you look deeper, then often you can see that it is the relationship between the sun and the moon. If you look deeper still, then you can see it's the relationship between day and night. But when you come to the core of it, it is always the relationship between the known and the unknown, the things you can see and the things you do not yet see. And the capacity to develop this getting to know the unknown is mainly about learning to see in the dark. In our own life, of course, we experience that, but in the daytime we can only see up to the horizon. Yes, we can look in the sun and burn our eyes, unless you train specifically. But you don't see any stars. You're limited in your perception basically to the event horizon, to the horizon of what you can see on Earth. But as soon as night falls, you're left in the dark. But once you're left in the dark and you get accustomed to looking in the dark, then suddenly you no longer see, say, the couple of hundred kilometers around you, or maybe even if you're in a different area, you can only see 10, 20, 30 kilometers away from where you are. But in the night, you can suddenly see light years away. So there is a profound difference in how we can perceive and how we relate to known to the unknown in the cycle of day and night. And that is specifically what we experience in this transition from awake to asleep. In that sense, when we go to sleep, we, let's say, come back to the nest, go back into the egg, go back into the first cell. You can actually see that, because in the sleep cycle there are four stages. The one most known is the consciousness of the outer world, the awake stage of the beta brainwaves. those are the sensations of the world around us, the activity as we connect to the world around us. At the moment that you close your eyes, you limit your perception, you in a way internally go from day to night, you go from the outer world to the inner world, and the next level in the sleep cycle is the alpha brain waves of the body sensations. They're also the dream state there, the after images of what you have been perceiving in the world around you. And they're the sensations of the body, the pulsations of the body, the rhythms of the breathing, and so on. When you internalize deeper into that, when you find that all of these rhythms are connected at a deeper level, you go to the organ level, where we actually digest our food, but also our information. So at the theta brainwave level, that's where we then activate the organ process. We can interact, interplay with the organ processes. The faith healers, the remote healers, they work from that level. And the measurements involved show that when faith healers or remote healers do their work, it is from that level, from the theta brainwave level, that they pulse a hologram burst into the environment. So it is not a string of communication, it's a pulsed communication from within that organ cycle. So the organs in that sense and are the god of the Olympus, and I say the burst of healing energy is like an explosion of the volcano at the core of these organs, from the blood cycle, from the electromagnetic system. There's this burst pulse of information that is released, and all of that takes place at the theta brain wave level of the body, which is the organ level of the digestion of food and information. And in the sleep cycle, after that, you go back to a deeper level of the delta brain waves, which is that of the cellular level. In shamanism, it's known as the gate of death. That's where the cheap and pitiful shamans kill a chicken, so that the dying of the chicken releases the delta brainwave, so that the fake shaman hitchhikes along on that and can do cell communication level interactions with the environment. Evidently, everybody can do that without slaughtering chickens, because in the sleep cycle, that's what we do. And as has been described by Satpram in The Memories of a Cell, describing Mother Mira, who was in Auroville in India, she used to meditate to the level of the cells and would then be perceived as if in coma or as if in a dead state, because when the consciousness goes all the way to the cellular level, of course we are at the deepest level of bodily survival and bodily life functioning. So that's what happens in the sleep cycle, which is that relationship between connecting the known and the unknown. In the day we are working with the known, in the night we are working with the unknown. But if you look at it from the other way, it's quite the opposite. So in the measurement of the consciousness development levels, it is said that when you are conscious, you are aware, you're at the beta brain waves, and then you close your eyes, you go to the half sleep state of alpha level, which is at the body level. When you go deeper, you go to the sleep level of the theta brain waves, and when you go to comatose deep sleep, you're at the delta wavelength. But when you look at what happens, basically the bird comes to nest. First you have the outer world, then you go back into the body world, then you go into organ world, and then you go into the cell world. So when you look at it from the level of the cell, then you can see that it is not the outer world which is conscious, and the body world which is subconscious, and the organ world which is unconscious, and the cell world which is out of conscious, which is how most people perceive it and know it. But when you look at it from the cell level, the cell is conscious. And then when the cell divides and forms groups, forms an organ, then the consciousness of the cells is part of the consciousness of the organ. So they are submerged into that. It's the subconscious level from the perspective of the cell. When the organ develops in forming the body, you have the different organs with their different qualities and their different functions, which are all interconnected. All of the organs in our body form one organ, which is the body then. And so at the body level, the cell in the organ will be part, will be submerged into what happens within that organ, and will experience what happens within the other organs without being a direct part of that. So the other organ activities for that cell will be unconscious. And then outside of our body will be very literally for the cell out of consciousness. So it is that cycle of the relationship between the conscious, the subconscious, the unconscious, and the out of conscious, which we navigate in the sleep cycle. And I think that one of the most important parts of human development is that people need to learn that it is not so that they are conscious when they are connected to the outer world and out of conscious when they are in deep sleep, but actually that they are in full conscious when they are in deep sleep, and they are sort of out of conscious or in outward conscious when they connect to the world. It is that relationship between the inner conscious and the outer conscious, or the inner world and the outer world, which is the essence of the relationship between living in the world and the mystical experience of life, or the outer world, as I've called it before, the reality, and the inner world of the realization. And once you understand that the sleep cycle actually forms that link, and that in that way it is also the link between the outer world as perceived by our sensory system on the surface of the body, and the inner world as perceived by the proprioception of the cells in the organs in the body, that we are actually always interfacing between the outer world and the inner world, and that the interfacing itself is where things happen. And yes, we can describe it as the relationship between the outer world and the inner world, or the surface of the body and the core of the body, or the forebrain and the hindbrain, as I mentioned before, that in the chicken, in the egg, when the chicken breaks out of the egg, it needs to activate, say, the hindbrain activities. But before it climbs out of the egg, it must have trained the forebrain activities. In the bird, it means that they will have to have developed the capacity to move their wings, to extend themselves in their environment. And that I'd like to come back to at some other point in growing up in politics, because that applies that. And I would also like to elaborate that another time in the story of God, because that's where you see that you need to internalize that. So once you realize that it is all about the relationship between the outer world and the inner world, then it is also possible to understand how autists, narcissists, psychopaths, and sociopaths sort of are not there yet in relating the outer world and the inner world. They start to act in the outer world without the sensitivities being in place yet. So this transition between the known and the unknown, as we can see it in our body and as we can see it in all life forms, is crucial also to understand the different kind of diseases that can occur in the discrepancy between reality and realization. That is also the discrepancy between the outer world and the inner world, or as it would be called in spiritual healing or shamanic healing, it's the discrepancy between the world image and the self image. So the world image and the self image is what we are dealing with when we are trying to address the relationship between the known and the unknown. And the reason why this concept of the sleep cycle is so important is because in the sleep cycle we actually see how the outer world, the body, the organs and the cells are connected, that they are represented by these four kind of brainwave frequencies, the beta frequencies for our sensations in the world around us, the alpha frequencies and the half sleep at the edge of the world in what happens in our body, the theta brainwave frequencies is what happens in the organs, and the delta frequencies of what happens in the cells. But as I mentioned before, it is really important to realize that we have that kind of birthing process that we need to do. When we are born, we go from an inner world to the outer world. When we go through puberty, we go from being an individual to being part of humanity. And in the mystic training, it is all about realizing that what we see in the world around us is not what it is about. The reality that we perceive is not what is happening. It is just an image which we create based on the standpoint of where we are, and due to the scope of vision and scope of perception that we have in our lookout, how we look at the world around us. So that is where it is necessary to see that we actually need to grow up and develop into perceiving more of the world around us by better understanding how things connect at a deeper level within us. And that's where I keep on referring to this model of the development of science. In science, we see that there are four stages. They're the counterpart of these levels of consciousness of out of conscious, subconscious, unconscious, and conscious, which correspond to these brainwave levels of the delta brainwaves of self consciousness, and then the theta brainwaves of the organ conscious, or capacity to correlate differences in perspective, and the alpha brainwaves of body consciousness, that we are able to embody that and act on it, and the beta brainwaves of out of consciousness, where we can then in the outer world apply that. So from the point of mysticism, that's how we develop, that we learn to go from inside to outside, and that as gods, as creators in creation, we are able to express and develop our innate capacities in this video game of this world around us. And that is what has been exemplified by the development of science. Science first looked at dead matter. So in that sense, it looked at the most out of conscious level of reality. The things that are, and the perception that things are fixed. And that's where classical science had this model of determinism, reductionism, materialism, mechanistic thinking. Because at a level of matter, you look at the state of bound electrons in this dynamic of creation of the universe, and at the level of the bound electrons, things are fixed or seem to be fixed. Science then realized that there was more to it, and in the theory of relativity, Einstein modeled the movement of the molecules, which he did by having the grass seed float on the water and describing these Zitterbewegung, the Brownian motion of the grass seed of the water to mimic the movement of the molecular dynamic. So in the theory relativity, there was this first description of the dynamic, the interactivity, and thus the relativity of the molecular process, which was no longer deterministic but relativistic. It was no longer fixed, but it was now dynamic, because it was no longer at the level of the bound electrons of the world around us, but it was at the level of the electron flow and the electron interchange in the electron circulation in the world around us. So it moved from classical science, the anatomy, to the physiology in relativistic science. Scientists then discovered that there was more to it. In fact, these two perspectives sort of came quite next to each other and parallel to each other. And that came from Max Planck's description of the quantum leap. Because when you go from matter to molecules, you can look into the atoms. Of course, you cannot physically look into them, but you can, with your mind, look into it, and that's what the whole mystic training is about. So when with your mind you look into matter, you find molecules, in the molecules you find the atoms, and then you find that it is not about the flow of electrons, but it is actually an interchange between electrons and protons, plus also neutrons being involved. And that there is a whole level of interactivity at a deeper level, where science suddenly realized that this was no longer deterministic, this was no longer relativistic, this was actually quite improbable. It was probabilistic. It was only possible to sort of guess at what was happening at this gaseous level of electron interchanges in the world. So we are now seeing the metaphor of getting to know, of going from the known to the unknown. Science first thought it was dealing with the known in the classical theory, and then it realized that it needed to understand that reality was a realization. It is a physiology. It is a process of how we relate to it, and relativity, relating, and that at that level, we need to have a different perspective on what is going on. With quantum theory, it became even more crucial, because it became evident that the way we relate to things at a relativistic level is determined by the kind of polarity we assume at the atom level, in that sea of probabilities. We actually can change our decisions, and as a result, we polarize the interface differently. So that we actually change the relationship between the known and the unknown at the level of the atoms. But the science then discovered that the level of the atoms is not enough to understand what happens. We need to look at the subatomic level. We need to get away from the electric or electronic particles, the protons, the neutrons, the electrons, and see what happens in the subatomic vibrational field. That's what field theory tries to describe. So we actually, in us, have a very explicit understanding already of how the known and the unknown relate. That science showed it. Science showed that what we thought we knew was wrong. As science showed that reality is not real at all. The deterministic, mechanistic, reductionistic model of classical science needed to be replaced. It needed to be added onto a foundation of relativity theory, which was the processes of how realization takes place. And that then needed to be replaced by quantum theory at the atomic level, where things are not relativistic but only probabilistic, and they're much more fuzzy. So we actually do what the alchemist said: we go from the fixed reality of earth to the fluid reality of water, to the gaseous reality of air, to the undefined reality of plasma. So that actually is the bridge for connecting the known and the unknown. In science, we can see that the known of the physical reality is actually a relativistic realization, which is only a probabilistic realization, which is based on a level of undefinable creation, which field theory tries to describe. So in science, we have this bridge between the known and the unknown very explicitly built. But of course, scientists can't build that, because the bridging already existed within us, within our body. And so when we look at the story of freedom of choice, which I've described elsewhere, then you can see that the pineal gland sits in that light field, in that domain which field theory tries to describe. And in that light field, the pineal gland positions itself between the forebrain and the hindbrain. It seeks to find the balance between the two. And so it is at that level where shamanistic practices then correlate the world image versus the self image. The world image in the forebrain, the self image in the hindbrain, and there needs to be a balance between them. So in autism, narcissism, the psychopath, the sociopath, it is at that level that something is not balanced out right in the center of it. And when it is balanced, it is from that relationship between the forebrain and the hindbrain in the light field that the pineal gland then gives the information to the hypophysis, which is actually a gland system which operates on the hormonal level and on the neuronal level. So it's actually a switch on activating the neurons or the hormones or both of them. Will it be a neuronal thing of changing our body in relationship to the environment, the animal response, or be it a hormonal response of an internal adaptation like the plants would do that? So that's fight flight on the one side, fear faint on the other side. So that's all the electrical effect of the hypophysis, which then triggers a change in the chemistry of the level of the chakras, which are also known as the organ glands, which change the internal climate of the body, as has been described by Claude Bernard, the milieu interne, that it is the chemistry of the body that is changed with molecules, hormones, exciting or slowing down the body, loosening it up or fixating it more. That's all at that level of using the zipper of creation, photon jump, electron oscillation, electron bonding. So at that level, in the chemistry of the body, the climate is changed so that the body goes more towards summer or go more towards winter, just as the classical healers described in the four humors of the body. And so at that level of the organ glands, it then has the effect on the body. The body cells will respond to that change of climate. They will grow faster, they will grow more, or they grow slower, they grow less. They will be more active, less active, they will be excited or they will be inhibited. And that's where the movement of the bodies then come out of the story. So that again is the relationship between the known and the unknown. That in a way you can see what happens at the body level, because the body cells do something, but they get the body, they get the information from the change of the climate in the body. When the organ glands do things differently and the internal climate changes, which is the chemistry of the body is changed, which is due to a change at the level of the neurons and hormones being rebalanced with respect to each other, which is due to the change of information in the light field. So in that sense, the relationship between the known and the unknown is most explicit in our body, because in the light field, it is the pineal gland that will coordinate, orchestrate what happens. It then goes on to the electromagnetic field, where the hypophysis with the neurons and the hormones will determine how the boundary is redefined. And as a result of that redefining of the boundary, the internal climate at the chemical level will then be reorganized. As a result of that, the physical functioning of the body will be redefined and activated in a different way. So that's where we then have the, say, the most connected to us understanding of the relationship between the known and the unknown. And there's only one part which then I need to add, because that's where we actually need to get away from science and into the mysticism and connect science to religion, because when we look at the scientific description of what happens in the world, we see that in our body things are different. Where science was looking at classical reality, relativistic reality, probabilistic reality, and now it's field reality, we see that in the body we are dealing with the anatomy corresponding with the classical model, the physiology corresponding with the relativistic model, the regulatory system with the neurons and the hormones, which is at that atomic electromagnetic quantum level, and at the deepest level we find that there is the photon field of pure information, which is the counterpart of what superstring theory, string theory, field theory try to describe. So in our body we have that the relationship between classical theory, relativity theory, probability theory, and unified theory, but we have something totally different going on, because we are not only dealing with the effect of the material coordination due to the photon jump, creating the electron jump, creating the electron oscillation, creating the electron bonding, as a result of which the light field triggers a change in the atomic field, triggers a different cohesion in a molecular field, which then changes different fixation in a material field, exactly as the alchemist described. In science, they look at that disregarding freedom of choice. That was due to the discourse between the Pope and Descartes. Descartes was allowed to look at matter, but not allowed to look at the soul. So basically, the Roman Church claimed monopoly on freedom of choice, and science was able to look at the system of material bonding and fixation. But once you understand that the electron, the photon leap leads to the electron leap, leads to the electron oscillation, leads to the electron bonding, in the process of fixation of atoms in forming molecules, in forming matter, based on the information in the quantum field, then of course the other way around, you can see that when that happens, and when atoms form molecules and form matter, that there are actually intentional gaps in that system, and they're called lacunations, in which the atoms are not in defined states as yet, and the molecules are not in definable states as yet, and matter is not in a fixated state at all. So in our body we find that there are materials which are not material at all. In fact, our whole body is composed of materials which are immaterial. So the body materials are a liquid crystal, which means that at this classical level of science, the body materials could be crystal or liquid depending on what the electromagnetic information field is doing around it. So the solidity of our body is very relativistic indeed. And when you go let me go back one step. At the material level, we are working with the piezoelectric, where the material shape is intact, but when you squeeze it, the electromagnetic field becomes evident. So at the piezoelectric level, there is this direct interaction between the physical and the physical. So the body is not that physical at all. When you go from the anatomy and the material structure to the physiology and the semi-material structure, that's where the liquid crystal story comes up. That with the change of information field, it goes from solid to liquid. The third level is that of the transistor. So let me put them next to each other again. The piezoelectric is where things stay solid, but the electromagnetic field sort of interacts with it directly. The liquid crystal is where the interaction of the electromagnetic field changes, triggers a shift between the solid and the liquid phases of matter. In the body, there is the transistor effect, also known as the transducer transponder, which is where the electrical flow in the material can be rerouted by the material. So you can see that from the piezoelectric to the liquid crystal to the transistor, the electric field becomes more and more interconnected with matter. So at the transistor level, the matter will change the flow of the electricity and the other way around. At a deeper level, we are dealing with the intelligent gel level of the body. Then we can see that information is actually a form of matter and the other way around. When the matter structure is reorganized, it is the information structure that will redefine how matter is composed. So in our body we can see that this capacity of information defining matter at the intelligent gel level is then what actually defines how materials will shunt direct the flow at the transistor level, which will then determine how the materialization takes place at the liquid crystal level, which then determines the information that is carried within the body at the piezoelectric level. So we're still talking about the relationship between the known and the unknown, but now we can redefine it as the relationship between the material and the informational level, or I call it physics and phasics. So when we see that physics is mirrored in phasics and our body explicitly and exquisitely shows how that takes place, then we can understand how phasics is leading to physics. We need to actually turn all of the known science around and realize that what science has been describing as reality is actually the process of realization. So the equations of science are the musical notations of what we have been doing in our mind. So we need to connect the science of matter to the phases of consciousness. In our body we can see how they connect, but we now still need to see that it means that the known and the unknown are actually the same. But we can only see that if we understand that the known is an expression of the unknown. So in our body we see how the information field works in on the atomic level, then works through into the molecular level, and it works out on the material level. So we call that the spiritual, the soul level, the mind level, and the body level. Or in a medical terminology, it would be the level of information integration at the light field, the level of system regulation at the electromagnetic level, then it is the physiology at the chemical level, and it is the physical structure at the level of state, physical level. So we could then look at the physical as if real, but the real is only anatomy of the reality that we know. So the physiology of that is the realization. It has a counterpart of the internal realization. Realization at the level of the physiology would be then the noun, and realization at the level of the regulatory system would be the verb. But when we look at the realization as the verb at the regulatory level, we can see that is actually creation already starting to be a noun. And at the deeper level of the light field, we see that we're dealing with creation as a verb. So the relationship between the unknown and the known isn't all that impossible. We are actually not dealing with the unknown in that sense. What we are more dealing with is that we are part of that unknown already, and cosmology describes that from the information field, the Van Oort gas cloud forms, then the ball lightnings of the stars forms, and then the planets form. That's the same story in a different way. But it means that the known of the things that we can describe is always based on the unknown of the things that we cannot describe. But that means that the known is an expression of the unknown via a very specific kind of unfolding algorithm. As I mentioned again and again, the unknown forms the known by this zipper action of the photon jump leading to an electron jump, leading to electron oscillation, leading to electron bonding. So when we can call it the known at the level of the electron bonding, we can still understand that the electron bonding is due to the electron oscillation at the molecular level, which is due to the electron leaps at the atomic level, but it all comes out of these photon leaps in the tetrionic quantum field. So suddenly we can use everything known in science as a kind of rear view mirror, that we need to simply turn around everything that has been described in science as if it was a description for reality, to understand it as a description for realization. It is the recipe for realization. It is the consequence of realization. So in that sense, we can then immediately link the known to the unknown, because that's what happened when science went from classical science to relativity science to quantum science to field science. And field science is now best described by tetrionic theory. So we actually do not have the known relating to the unknown, but we do have an issue with the different dimensions in which this happens. The known of the physical reality is three-dimensional. The process of the physiology of reality, the dynamic of realization, is two-dimensional. It is a process in time. But the regulation of what happens at that level is one-dimensional. It is the shock waves at the energy level. But the foundation of it is a zero-dimensional relationship of the quantum flip. And that's why I need to come back to this duality of what science describes on the one hand and religion describes on the other. The foundation of it is the quantum flip. If you look at it in the material level as science does, then you see how the quantum flip will change atoms, which will change molecules, which will change matter. And our cells are all able to do that. But when we look at the cells' capacities, they are able to orchestrate a quantum flip, which means that cells are able to operate freedom of choice. As a result, at the atomic level, they can make changes. Cells work with nuclear atomic forces, which means that cells are able to produce, transform molecules, which is what is known, most known about cells. And as a result, the cells will produce the body materials. And as I mentioned before, those are piezoelectric, they're liquid crystal, they're transistor, they're intelligent gels. So all of the body materials interact with the information field. So physics and physics is directly connected in our body. So the body materials are actually the motherboard or the computation environment in which the cells operate freedom of choice. So that is where we need to be very clear and explicit, that we need to complement the models of science, which were with disregard of freedom of choice. We need to connect it with the science of life, which includes the freedom of choice. And then we actually already have the bridge between the known and the unknown. So the known is what science or our society calls the world without freedom of choice, specifically because it is repeatable, verifiable, and in a way predictable. But everything that has to do with life is non-verifiable, non-predictable, and non-repeatable. So we need to combine these two realities. So the science of dead matter needs to be complemented with the science of life. And in doing that, we can see that the link is in the core of the cell, in the tetrionic quantum field. And then we can find the basis on relating the known and the unknown. And then actually, we see that we need to reinterpret that understanding, because we are actually then dealing with the relationship between the predictable and the unpredictable, or the reality without freedom of choice and the reality with freedom of choice, and then we are actually not dealing with the known and the unknown, but we are actually dealing with the past and the future, or that what is and that what can be. And specifically at the edge between them, we're dealing with our capacity, the cellular capacity to flip a quantum, so that we are able to shift between the physical and the non-physical. We are able to relate the material to the information world. And in order to truly understand that, we must stop thinking in terms of the physical world, but learn to meditate, to connect our perceptions of the world around us to what happens in our body, to understand that what happens in our body is based on how the organs between them process different aspects of information. And as a result, we can come to the core of our being, that we are really operating freedom of choice. In a different way, you could say that we are dealing with the relationship of understanding that the reflexes that we work with are based on convictions that we have, are based on decisions that we took, are based on the freedom of choice that we have. So then I would like to round this off in saying, well, in discussing the relationship between the known and the unknown, we are actually addressing this dynamic of the sleep cycle, which is the transition between four levels of consciousness, which are also the transition between the pineal gland, the hypophysis, the organ glands, and the body cells. And in that we see how information is processed and regulated at the electromagnetic level, then orchestrated and organized at the chemical level, and leads to the physical structure of the body. And all of that is also how we orchestrate our relationship to the world, our relationship to other people, and the religious, the political, the corporate, and the scientific structures. So we can all bring that back to the relationship of the known and the unknown, which we can now see to be the relationship between phasics and physics. And then we can see that in our body, we actually have the key to relate that, and in the physical sense, and in the metaphysical sense. So in our body, we can see how spirit and body are actually connected.